You're listening to The RN Mentor, a podcast designed to document and bring you the work and experience of some of the most influential nurses in our profession. We will be sitting down and having a discussion with the leaders of today's nursing world as they share their work, how they navigate their nursing path, and their views on the future of the profession. My name is Ali Tayeb. I am a registered nurse, United States Navy veteran, a Jonas Veterans Healthcare Scholar, and your host for The RN Mentor. And welcome to another episode of the RN Mentor Podcast. Super excited today to be joined by Dr. Selena Gillis. Dr. Gillis is a clinical associate professor and associate dean of the undergraduate program at New York University Rory Myers College of Nursing. She is an affiliate faculty member of the Hartford Institute for Geriatric Nursing, where she serves as co-director of HIGN Scholars Program. Dr. Gillis is also an affiliate associate professor at Howard University College of Nursing and Allied Health Sciences and volunteer associate professor for the State University of Haiti. Dr. Gillis has a DMP from Monmouth University, an MS in adult health nursing from Hunter College, City University of New York, and a BS with a major in nursing degree from Long Island University. Dr. Gillis is a certified clinical nurse educator and is also certified in critical care nursing. Dr. Gillis has been an adult nurse practitioner specializing in neuro, pain management, substance misuse, and global public health. Dr. Gillis is known for creating and implementing non-traditional immersive teaching and learning innovations to address nationally identified nursing education issues that will enhance student learning programs and outcomes. Dr. Gillis is passionate about the management of acute and chronic pain, as well as opiate overdose prevention. She is the program director of the Greater New York City Black Nurses Association Opioid Overdose Prevention Program. She has strong community advocacy and passion for global health, currently working with organizations aimed to serve the underprivileged and underserved communities in Haiti, Ghana, and Nigeria. She currently serves as the Vice President of the DMPs of Color. Dr. Gillis is an NLN LEAD alum, Penn Wharton Nurse Executive Leader alum. She has received the NBNA Under 40 Award, Nurse of the Year Award for Community Service, and Advanced Practice Nurse of the Year Award. She has also received the Leota P. Brown Community Service Award from Chi Eta Phi Sorority. Dr. Gillis is the recipient of the GNYCBNA Nurse of the Year for Community Service and the NYU Myers Humanitarian Award. Dr. Gillis is also a fellow of the New York Academy of Medicine, a fellow of the American Academy of Nursing, and a fellow of the Academy of Nurse Education. Dr. Gillis has also been recognized as a distinguished geriatric nurse educator, designated by the National Hartford Center for Gerontological Nursing. Welcome to the show, Dr. Gillis.
I know that was a mouthful. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited today.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are a lot of initials and names, and well, very well deserved, because I happen to know you for a couple of years, and every time I turn around, you're being recognized by the incredible work that you're doing. I'm so proud to hopefully call you my friend, because we have a little bit of history, having crossed each other's paths in some conferences and having some chit chats once in a while.
And so we were inducted together.
And we were inducted as fellows of the American Academy of Nursing in 2023. So absolutely. So we had some time on the dance floor as well. So
yes.
So very, very kind of you to take the time and join me. Usually when I read people's bios, the awards and accolades are always there, but you really live what I would call the core of nursing, of getting engaged with the community and the underserved, because I think that's where like nursing needs to live more, in my opinion.
Oh, yes.
And I don't think we live there enough. So we'll definitely get into that conversation, because I definitely want to know what drives you into those communities. But I want to start with, how did you decide you were going to get into the world of nursing?
Oh, goodness. Believe it or not, I didn't start out wanting to be a nurse. I think a lot of people might have that journey, but I didn't start out wanting to be a nurse. It was really about my grandmother. She helped to raise me. And when I was in high school, unfortunately, she got really ill. And really, just to see how the nurses and doctors cared for her, a part of that sparked my interest in healthcare. I also think about my mom, who retired last year after working 33 years as a certified nursing assistant, certainly exposed me to being able to work in the hospital over the summer. So I had an idea that I wanted to be in healthcare, but I didn't start out wanting to be a nurse. And funny enough, I wanted to be a pediatrician. And this was because when I was about 15, I worked at the hospital that my mother was working at for the summer on a pediatric unit. And of course, I played with babies all day. So absolutely wanted to be a pediatrician. And so that really sparked my interest in healthcare. And when I went to college, I went to Pace University first. I was a pre-med major. Unfortunately, that was during the time of 9/11. And I was actually in class on 9/11. And that was just a horrific experience for many reasons. And so at that moment, I decided that I wanted to change schools. And that's actually how I ended up at Long Island University. So during college, I was a double major, pre-med and also nursing. The reason for that is because I don't come from money. I was brought up in an underserved area. And I knew how expensive medical school was. So I thought to myself, well, let me have a backup plan in the event that I don't get into medical school. We know that it's very competitive. We know that it's very expensive. So throughout college, I actually took 18 credits every semester, went to summer school every summer just to fulfill the requirements of both going to medical school and entering the nursing program. And so in my third year, when I entered the nursing program and started to begin with those clinical experiences, that's when I was really exposed to the nursing profession and really saw the differences in the care provided by nurses versus doctors. And I said to myself, you know what? That's what I want to do. Needless to say, when I had my pediatric clinical on the first day, we went to the NICU and I cried. I mean, boo-hoo cried. And I said, you know what? Maybe working with kids is not for me. And so I ended up graduating, of course, with my BS in nursing and enough of the credits to actually go to medical school, but decided not to. But now I am a nurse practitioner. I've been a nurse practitioner for now 14 years, and I feel like I have the best of both worlds. So I think I made the right decision in becoming a nurse. No regrets whatsoever.
Well, I can tell you from a nurse being in a nursing profession, I appreciate you choosing nursing over other professions, because I'm glad, because like I said, this like people like yourself that really enrich the future of nursing, and I appreciate that. So at what point did you think like you want to continue with your becoming a nurse practitioner and eventually getting your doctorate? Like, what was the driver for that?
I will tell you that nothing in my career happened the way that I planned it. But I do believe you ultimately end up where you are supposed to be. So in my very last semester at Long Island University, with the clinical rotation, it was a one-on-one experience. And I had the opportunity to work in the OR where there were nurse anesthetists. And I said, oh, this is cool. I think I can do that. Not only that, it was the representation. There were nurse anesthetists that looked like me. And so I said to myself, I can do that. I can be that. And so I've always been sort of a very ambitious person. When I set my mind to something, I'm going to figure it out. What do I have to do to get to that point? And so the only hospital that I've ever worked at, I always tell my students, I was born and raised at New York Presbyterian while Cornell. It's the only hospital that I've ever worked at. And so once I started working there, I had it in my mind, if I want to be a nurse anesthetist, I need to work in the ICU. And so I spent my very first year in med-surg, although people think, well, why not just go directly into the ICU? But I thought it was important for me to get that preliminary experience, work on my time management, my delegation, all of the things that are important for a new nurse. So went to a med-surg unit, knew that I needed to have ICU experience in order to be a nurse anesthetist. So once that year was up, I applied to work in the medical ICU. I probably was a little bit too ambitious in thinking, well, you know what? Let me apply to grad school. Let me take some of those preliminary courses while I'm getting my ICU experience so that I can have a head start, which is what I did. Needless to say, I probably was a little bit too ambitious in that I applied to nurse anesthesia school with 9 months of ICU experience. Certainly very naive, right? Most people who are applying, especially in the tri-state area, they know how competitive it is. There's not a lot of programs. They don't take a lot of students. So of course, I didn't get in. It wasn't for me, but I was already enrolled at Hunter in their, at that time, adult nurse practitioner program. We don't have those anymore, but I was already enrolled into the adult nurse practitioner program. So I just decided to continue. So that's actually how I ended up becoming a nurse practitioner. I didn't intend to. I wanted to be a nurse anesthetist, but I didn't get into the program, the one program that I applied to. And so I continued on my journey and completed my master's degree and became an adult nurse practitioner.
Wow, outstanding. I'm going to put a plug in for Dr. Walina Gould, who runs the diversity CRNA program. So if you're interested in the CRNA if you don't see enough of, I would say, of your own ethnicity in the profession that you're trying to get into, she has been a great mentor and cheerleader, and her program is outstanding. So I'm going to put that plug in. And she was on the Iron Mentor podcast a few, I want to say a year, maybe 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. She's at every conference, it feels like, that I go to. So I always see her. So she's an amazing person. But it feels like you always have a plan B. Double applying to everything, which has worked out for you, which is fantastic.
It has worked out for me. And you know what? I continue with the same habit. I have a plan A, but you better believe there's a B, C, and D just in case. You have to stay ready so you don't need to get ready, right? Always prepared.
Very true. Very true. Now, with your DMP, how did you decide you're going to get your DMP?
And so that's another sort of unintentional story. I feel like my entire career is that way. So I was working at NYP Cornell, I finished my master's degree. At this point, I was about 4 years in the medical ICU. At the time when I became a nurse practitioner, there weren't a lot of jobs, especially in the inpatient setting. Of course, right now we don't have that problem. There are NP jobs everywhere. But I really wanted to work inpatient and there weren't a lot of jobs. It actually took me a whole year to find my first NP job. Wow. So funny enough, one day I was walking in the hallway. I think I was going to the blood bank for my patient and I ran into a colleague that I used to work with on the med-surg unit. And at that time, she was actually the nurse manager. And she said to me, she said, oh, I heard that you finished your master's degree. What are you up to? And I said, I'm having difficulty finding a job as a nurse practitioner, still looking, really want to work in the hospital, really want to stay here. I've been here for 5 years. So I'm being patient and I'm looking, would love to work in cardiology. That was my plan. And so she said, I'm a clinical instructor at NYU, and I think that you would be great at that job. You've oriented new nurses. You've served as charge nurse. And I said, well, I never really thought about teaching, but maybe that's something that I could consider. And so she connected me with the powers that be at NYU. And the very next semester, I started as a clinical instructor at Cornell and took my students to the unit that I used, the med-surg unit that I used to work in. And I said, this is kind of nice. I like this job. I like teaching people who want to be nurses, the future nurses, shaping and molding them. I really like this. So then the following semester, I started working as a nurse practitioner at Cornell in outpatient neuro. And I enjoyed that. And so I said, you know what? Let me try precepting NP students. So I precepted a few NP students over that next year, continued to teach at NYU as an adjunct clinical instructor in the undergraduate program, and really started to enjoy nursing education. And so I said to myself, well, if I want to take this seriously, if I want to go as far as I possibly could go, I'll need a doctoral degree. So I started doing my research, trying to find a program that was right for me. And I did. And so I enrolled in a DNP program. And while in that program, I continued to work as a nurse practitioner and a clinical instructor. But one of the things that happens with a lot of people, and why I'm really passionate about DNPs of color, I was the only one in my program. And I don't even think I actually knew any other nurses with a doctoral degree. So it was difficult, but I knew that it was something that I absolutely had to do.
Wow, that's amazing. And you did mention the DNPs of color and what a great organization. And if you get an opportunity for my listeners to check out DNPs of color, and it has grown over the years, and with an incredible mission with Dr. McCamey at the helm, and she's your bestie, so she's
yes.
And she has been on the show. And for the record, I was the first podcast to have Dr. McCamey on the show, so I'm going to take accolades for that.
Love it.
But what a great organization, just because I think, again, I always share with my audience that I purposefully diversify my show for the purpose, because we just don't see enough of it in traditional settings of service and academia, and we're just not exposed. And as you mentioned, like you didn't know any other DNP of color, or you didn't know any doctorally prepared individuals that were, of color. And unfortunately, the reality is we don't normally see them unless you seek them out, or you're looking for them, or you happen to be at a conference or something. And most nurses, unfortunately, don't go to conferences, the big national conferences, where there is a little bit more diversity of the individuals that are participating in those. And they're not members of various organizations, like, for example, the Black Nurse Association, the Hispanic Nurse Association, DNPs of color, where you have that representation more readily accessible to you. So important that we have nurses engage in these various organizations. And something, and just for my audience, I did cut Dr. Gillis's a bio short, but if you look at the website, you'll see she's a member of a number of various nursing organizations, and like I said, it's important to be engaged with the profession of nursing, especially if you're looking for what's beyond the four walls of the hospitals that we tend to serve in, and what we're stereotypically are, the profession is associated with. So I want to talk a little bit about the humanitarian work you do, the work that you do with populations that are underserved. How did you get involved in that process, and why?
Good question. So I am a native New Yorker, if you could not tell by the accent, born and raised in Brooklyn. Like I said, I don't come from money. I grew up in underserved areas. That's been my experience growing up, not having teachers who look like me, being surrounded by people who don't have the resources that they need to survive their day to day or even be successful. And so that was something that stuck out for me. My grandmother came to New York City from the South with her three kids, literally started fresh. And we didn't have a lot, but she instilled in me how important it was to help others, even if you don't even have much for yourself, but it's important to serve others and really to serve God. The other part of that is that my father is from Haiti, born and raised in Haiti. He came to the United States permanently when he was in his 20s, again, coming from an area where he didn't have the resources that he needed. I remember him telling me the stories of him standing by the streetlight, trying to do his homework or walking miles to school. And so I come from a background where we didn't really have much. And I feel like in being in this profession, it's a blessing. And so I want to be able to share that blessing with others. And that's really at the core of what I do. And so when I finished my master's degree, actually my very first experience as a nurse practitioner was on a medical mission trip. Literally 2 months after I graduated in 2010, I went to Haiti on a mission trip with faculty members from Long Island University. And it was the year that Haiti had their earthquake.
Oh yeah.
In January. So at that time, there were still a lot of people living in tent cities. There were still, even 8 months later, lots of rubble, lots of TB, lots of cholera. And that was my very first experience as an NP, my very first global experience. And I had been to Haiti before, but this was really going in a different capacity. And it was life-changing. We are so used to the luxuries that we have here. Running water, a toilet that you can flush, soap to wash your hands, hot water to shower with, food. But when you're doing some of this work, you don't always have those luxuries. And so I went down with a team of other healthcare professionals. We brought all of the medications, all of the supplies that we need to maintain a clinic for a week. And we opened up in a random building that didn't even have doors, didn't have running water, didn't have a toilet to flush. I am Haitian, but I call myself a fake Haitian because I do not speak Creole. So literally I had myself, my translator, my stethoscope, my pen light, and my knowledge, right?
Yeah.
We're used to when we see patients here, we can Google something, right? We can order fancy blood tests. We can send them for an x-ray. Couldn't do any of that. And so I think that's what really honed my critical thinking skills and really allowed me to think like a nurse. It makes me a better provider because I know how to survive in situations where I don't have a lot of resources. And so I was there for 10 days, treated babies all the way to older adults, saw so many different conditions, had to be the nurse practitioner, the nurse, the physical therapist, even the pharmacist and dispense drugs. And it was such a life-changing experience. And I do encourage all nurses and other healthcare professionals, if you have the opportunity to do global work, please take advantage of it. It really just transforms your life. And so it was also important to me to go to the country where my father was from. Mm. And I feel like I can give back to them. So since then, I have been to Haiti for another medical mission with another organization. And I also teach voluntarily for the State University of Haiti, who lost their funding a couple of years ago. So they're relying on volunteer professors. And so I've been doing that for about 3 years, teaching in their nurse practitioner program virtually. So I do really, as much as I can, try to give back to Haiti because that's where I'm from. But I've also been on medical missions to Ghana and Nigeria. In total, I've been on 7 missions and I hope to do hundreds more.
Fantastic. So thank you for the work that you're doing with those populations, because it is very much needed. I do have a question for you. You had that opportunity to go initially with your university. How do you think, or should that be part of what most universities are providing as part of the experience? Would you say that's something, because we are so NCLEX and focus on those standardized like national exams for certifications and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like something like serving a population like that is definitely not on the books for most universities. How are those funded, and how can, for example, if somebody from a school of nursing is listening and wants to do something like that, how would they go about even like seeking those opportunities out?
So there are a few things. People always ask me, well, why do you get involved in a global work? And I always use the analogy, and I say, because they think, well, why do you care about what's happening in that other country? Why do you care about what's happening across the world? And I always use the analogy, if your neighbor's house is on fire, whether you live next door to them, across the street, or down the block, that fire is going to impact you in some way. So we have to care about what's going on in other parts of the world. And we've certainly seen that with COVID. Because it's happening in another country, that doesn't mean that we're exempt from it. And so that's really one of the reasons why I get involved in global health, and I encourage others to get involved in global health. I'm a huge public health person, and as a nurse educator working at a large institution, and most institutions are this way, we are preparing our nurses, of course, to be nurse generalists. But where do we train them? We train them to work in a hospital.
Right?
And in a hospital, yes, we need nurses to work at the bedside, but that's not where the true health care takes place. Our goal really should be to prevent our patients from going into the hospital. So I would say on a global front, if you're interested in getting into global missions, to really look out for organizations that are doing this work, making sure that they're reputable organizations that are doing this work, speak to their CEO, check out their website, speak to people who may have gone on missions with them. One of the things that you should be aware of is that it tends to be a very expensive thing to do, right? I always say, if I could do global missions every day, I would, but that's not going to pay the bills. And so you do have to be aware of the financial cost to you for participating in medical missions in terms of being able to secure your lodging, flights, all of the immunizations that you have to get. And so there's a lot of research and a lot of preparation that you have to go through in order to participate in medical missions, but don't let that stop you. Certainly it's important for you to do that, because the patients that we are caring for in those other countries, those are patients that we are seeing here in the United States. And so it's a great way to learn about different cultures and how to approach their care, and making sure that we are providing culturally congruent care. But on the education front, I make it my mission as much as possible to be able to expose my students to global health, to public health, to community health. Actually, on one of my medical missions back in 2019 to Ghana, I took 7 students.
Wow.
And they loved that experience. My first trip to Nigeria, I took 2 students with me. Last year to Nigeria, I took 2 students with me. So where I can expose students to the work that I'm doing, I try to. And so if I'm doing global work, I try my best to get my students involved. If I'm doing community health, I try my best to get my students involved, because I believe that the true healthcare, where we truly make a difference, is in the community. We have our students, like in most universities, they're taking community courses, but their clinical tends to be an ambulatory center, not necessarily in the heart of the community. And so one of the things that I've been fortunate to be able to do is I have a lot of relationships and partnerships with different people and organizations. And so they reach out to me when they're doing health fairs, or they reach out to me when they're doing health-related events, and I'm able to get my students involved. But that's really the benefit of being a part of a professional organization. To give you an example, in 2021, an FQHC, a federally qualified health center, reached out to me and a colleague to have a conversation about setting up a COVID vaccine clinic. And we were able to set up 4 FEMA sites, 2 which we staffed regularly with not only members of our organization, but also with student nurses who at that time were not able to go into the clinical setting because of COVID. So as nurses, as healthcare providers, as educators, it's our job, our duty to definitely stay abreast with current clinical practice and to work in the community. But I also believe that it's our duty to expose our students to those experiences. And it really does allow them to see that there are other places you can work outside of the hospital. There are other things that you can do besides working in a hospital. So wherever I can, I try to expose my students to diverse learning experiences. And I wish everyone could go on a global mission. I wish everyone can do community health education, but I'm trying to do my part to make that happen for as many students as possible.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I'm just going to, I happen to have moved into an FQHC not too long ago. And we do actually have a mobile health unit that we have a partnership with one of the local universities. And we have, by the end, it's grant funded. And by the end, we will have had the opportunity to put 30 pre-licensure bachelor students in the mobile health unit, and they go out into the community. So very community based.
But that's what we do it for, and that's wonderful. With us, we had probably 100 pre-licensure students that rotated throughout our sites over about a 5-month period. Not to mention, the program was nurse practitioner led, which we absolutely loved. And we delivered over 28,000 vaccines during that time. So yeah, it was really a valuable experience.
Yeah. And you can see the growth in the students, right? Mm-hmm. Rather than being in the hospital setting, that you do see them grow in the hospital setting. Not that the hospitals, they're not growing there, but as a kid, it's a different growth, right?
Oh, yeah.
It really opens up their eyes to the, to what community service really means. Absolutely. As a nurse, right? Mm-hmm. And from that perspective, I think that's, they get a completely different perspective of what the profession is capable of doing or can do, rather than just a day-to-day of hospital settings. And I wish there was more of that.
Yes.
Like I said, I'm lucky enough to right now work with an organization that has, even though it's an FQHC, it's ambulatory care, mm-hmm. but all of the clinics are purposefully in the community, right? Yeah. Like they're embedded into that community setting. So they are the neighbors of the, the minoritized populations and the underserved populations, and they're smack dab in the middle of the neighborhood. So one of the things I appreciate about it. I think it's important for us to have that exposure. Now, from the perspective of you doing these global missions, how has it changed your practice back home?
That is a good one. I started out that first NP experience in another country, not having people around that I could easily call to ask for help, not having internet access to Google things, remembering and having to physically bring books with me, right? We don't do that these days. We can Google anything, but physically bring books with me. It taught me how to listen intentionally, because if you think about our day-to-day practice, when we're seeing patients in the hospital, we're seeing patients in the office, what are we doing? We're talking to them, but we're not really looking at them. We're charting in our computer because we know how long documentation takes us. We don't really have our full attention on our patients. So it really taught me to listen intentionally. And so I definitely brought that back home with me. When I'm meeting with my patients, I'm not even thinking about what I need to document. It's me sitting with you, looking at you, having a conversation with you, showing you that I care, taking as much time as I need, because I know how important it is for patients to have a provider that listens, right? We've all mm-hmm. had that experience where we go to the doctor, we're waiting for hours, they see us for 5 minutes, and we didn't even get to ask our questions. And so it really has taught me to intentionally listen, and not having the fancy resources really does help you with your critical thinking skills, your clinical judgment, and being able to process information. And so I'm hearing all the clues as my patients are telling me a story, and I can process this in my mind and start to rule out things. And so it becomes, the interaction with the patient becomes much more purposeful and meaningful, and patients appreciate that. And they don't care that they have to wait to see you for 2 hours, because they know you are going to spend the time with them that you need to spend. I also learned to ask a lot of questions, especially a lot of clarifying questions, because what you'll see being on medical missions is that the terminology that we use doesn't always translate across directly. And an example that I can give you is when we go to Ghana, we talk to our patients about birth control. And so if I say birth control to you, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But in that country, it's almost like, birth control, what is that? And so they have a different term. They call it family planning. And so you have to be mindful of the language that you're using when you're speaking to patients, keeping things simple. It taught me to be more culturally sensitive, more culturally appropriate, more culturally congruent, and really giving patients the time that they deserve. That means I work long hours, yes, but I think that patients really do appreciate it.
Well, based on all your accolades, I don't think you take a rest day at all, but it's all for a good purpose. But now I have a good question, because you use the term culturally congruent, and I appreciate that, because I hear cultural competency so much, especially in education, in the world of education. You have to be culturally competent, and I always tell people, I'm not even culturally competent in my own culture, let alone somebody else's, right? So I appreciate you using that terminology, but what does that actually mean from a nursing perspective, to be culturally congruent or culturally sensitive? What does that mean? Because most people are using cultural competency and with the new essentials, with ANCC or ANCCs, AACNs,
so many letters,
CCNE, all of a sudden, with the new essentials that have rolled out in academia with competency-based education. And I know cultural competency is a verbiage that you see throughout many of the documents and books. What does that mean? What does that mean from a nursing perspective?
I agree with you. I don't like that term cultural competency, because I believe that there are just so many cultures out there, and there's no way that you can know every little intricate detail about every culture. But I think when it relates to being culturally congruent, it's just really about being willing and open, listening, learning, but also remember that the patient is the driver of their care. So really focusing on what it is that they need in order to have good patient outcomes. Where's the intersection of their health condition with their culture, with their ethnicity, with their caregivers, and really putting them in the driver's seat of their healthcare and allowing them to make those necessary decisions that they have to make with your guidance, with your education, and making sure that they are actually getting what it is that they need in whatever capacity so that they can meet their health outcomes. And so you have to partner with your patients. It's not about me making the decisions for you. It's about us having that partnership to make sure that we are on the same page. We have the same goals as it relates to your healthcare.
Yeah, I agree. want to be conscious of the time we have left. I do want to touch on one more thing before I hand this off to you for any final words, but how has mentorship affected your career path, and how do you reciprocate that with your mentees?
So I will say I'm probably like most people in that when I was starting out in my career, I probably didn't even know what a mentor was. I didn't think that that was something that I needed, because I didn't have that modeled for me, right? I didn't see people getting mentored, and there's different ways that you can actually obtain a mentor. Sometimes you have people who see certain things in you that sparks their interest and that says to them, you know what, they're going to be a star, but I'm going to help them get there. And I've had that for myself. And so when I come across those students, I try to be that person. And so I'm a big believer in pulling others up as you climb. And so mentorship was not something that I thought about when I was coming up, but I will tell you this, and I tell her this story all of the time. Dear friend, Dr. Kelly Bryan, who's now working at the NLN, believe it or not, when I was in college, she was my maternity professor. So here it is, I'm seeing a Black woman as my college professor. I didn't have a lot of that coming up in elementary school. I didn't have a lot of teachers that looked like me. So to see this Black woman at the head of the class, teaching the class, it was so monumental for me. And she was one of two. One of two. A lot of people don't experience teachers or professors that actually look like them. And so that was sort of one of the steps. And then going on to do my master's degree, still wasn't thinking about mentorship. And mentorship at that time probably would have been wonderful for me in that I didn't even know nurse practitioners. I couldn't tell you one nurse practitioner that I knew, which was difficult because we had to find our own preceptors. And so I didn't have that example. I didn't know any nurse practitioners. And then going into my doctoral degree, still didn't really have any mentors, knew what I wanted to do, knew what I had to do to get there. And then being the only one in my program. And I said to myself, you know what? There are certain things that I wish that I had in coming up in my career. I didn't have those. And that's okay. I ended up where I needed to be. There were people that I met along the way that certainly have helped me in my career, especially Dr. Sheldon Field. And so what I started to sort of hold at my core is that I am going to be all of the things that I wish that I had when I was coming up in my career. And so there were people that sought me out and saw something in me and wanted to mentor me. And so I make sure that I am doing the same thing, especially for students of color, because they don't get that exposure. And so I recognize the power that I have in being where I am and holding the position that I'm holding, and that there are people that are always watching, that you're always motivating, and you're not even aware of it. And so where I can, when I come across stellar students or students who may even be struggling, I try to figure out a way I can lend them a helping hand. And, you know, students are often intimidated, right? You're a big doctor, so-and-so, you have all these letters after your name, and they don't want to approach you. They don't want to ask you for help. And so I recognize that, and I try my best to seek out those students, check in with them, offer them mentorship. But it's not just about the mentorship, right? It's about the sponsorship and the coaching, right? People always think about mentorship, but it's about sponsorship and coaching. It's about having someone who's going to guide you through your career. It's about having someone who's going to speak your name in rooms when you're not even there. So it's not just that mentorship, it's that coaching, it's that sponsorship that's always important. And so I have wonderful people in my corner that do those things for me. And so I try to be the person that I wish I had when I was coming up and making sure that I'm pulling up others as I climb. And it's a huge weight to carry, right? Because you're almost feeling like I have to succeed. I can't fail. But they need to know about your failures, because those failures have led to later successes too. And sometimes you know, and speaking for myself, you can get overwhelmed with the stresses, especially of academia, and you have to think, oh my God, why am I doing this? Why am I putting myself through this? Why do I continue this work? And then I remind myself of the why, my original why. Why am I a nurse in the first place? And it's because I really care about people and I want to do my part to change the world. And so when I'm having those difficult moments, I remember my why, but I also try not to be so self-centered and realize that it's bigger than me. All that I'm doing is not just for me. Of course, the rewards that I get from it, I appreciate it, but it's not why I do it. And so it's bigger than me. I need to keep working hard. I need to keep being that example. I need to keep being the representation for all of those people who I don't know, who are watching me. I am paving the way for them in the same way that others have paved the way for me. And with my mentees, I always tell them, I promise you, if I have anything to do with it, you are going to be much better than me. And your job is to make sure that you bring up the next person. We have to continue doing that, especially if we want to diversify the nursing workforce.
Absolutely. Absolutely. 100% agree. With that said, I'm going to, well, I sort of lied. With your final comments, I also want you to talk a little bit about the DMPs of color,
yes,
which I know is a big big undertaking, and also a lot of that mentorship and sponsorship component that you just spoke of.
Yes. So,
please.
So I have been with DMPs of Color now for about 2 years. I met Danielle McKamey, my bestie, 3 years ago. And there was something about the organization that really resonated with me, just really remembering being the only person of color in my doctoral program, not knowing nurse practitioners, not knowing nurses with doctoral degrees. And when you look at the statistics, nurses of color with doctoral degrees are less than 1%. And so in recognizing that, that's why I was really drawn to that organization from my own personal experience, and also because of what the organization is about: the mentoring, the networking, the advocacy, the pulling each other up as we climb. So many people are on their doctoral journey, and they don't have someone who they can reach out to ask for advice, to vent, whether they're a student of color or not. But when you add to it the layer of being underrepresented in this profession, it really stood out to me how much students of color don't have that resource. And so that's why it was very, very important for me to join DMPs of Color. I currently serve as the vice chair, and it's been wonderful working with Danielle and the rest of the team. We have a lot of great programming. We just did a book club with the Black Angels book by Maria Smilios, really highlighting the Black Angels and Virginia Allen, and so much wonderful programming that we've been able to put forth. We now have membership. We have over 350 members. We actually launched our membership last October at our conference, our third conference. And so it's wonderful to see the people that we're able to help. There isn't another organization that exists like this for students of color, DMPs of color. And I was able to attend my first DMPs of Color conference last year. And I've been to a lot of conferences. I do a lot of conference hopping. And outside of attending a National Black Nurses Association conference, I've never been to another conference that, when I was there, I felt like I was home. The things that we were talking about were the things that were important to me. I felt like I was amongst family. I felt like I could fully show up and be myself. And that's an amazing feeling. And that's not a feeling that most nurses of color can get when they go to other spaces, when they're in other spaces, even in their own place of employment. And so that feeling is what I want to nurture. And I want to be able to, again, be what I didn't have when I was coming up, when I was doing my DMP, that representation, that person that understands your struggle, that group of people that know, yeah, we have to often work twice as hard to get the same opportunities as others. We're often dealing with microaggressions and macroaggressions, and we have specific needs in our workplace that are not necessarily catered to. So to have that network of people who understand your struggle, but can also help you when you're struggling and give you advice and help you to win, I mean, there's absolutely nothing like it.
Yeah, absolutely. Creating those safe spaces, right? that are key. So yeah, I appreciate it. Well, thank you. I thank you so much for your time. Any last words?
Oh my gosh, it was so amazing to speak with you and just really go down memory lane. I can't believe I've been a nurse for almost 20 years.
Amazing.
Hoping to do it for 40 more. And I encourage anyone who's listening, whether you're new in your career or thinking about going into nursing and thinking about advancing your degree, remember why you are doing it. It's not an easy journey. It takes a lot of hard work, and this might sound cliche, but a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. But ultimately, I would say this is the best decision I've ever made. For more than 20 years, nursing has been related the most trusted profession, but also the hardest degree to get.
Very
and so
true,
when you,
very true.
When you think about how hard you work to get here, remember your why on those days that you're struggling. And I encourage all of you to really do the best that you can, do your part to change the world.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. And I appreciate you for all the work that you're doing. And thank you so much for your time and sharing your journey with myself and the audience. So thank you so much. We have been listening to Dr. Selena Gillis, and please make a note of her name, because she's still has another 40 years of incredible things to accomplish. So looking forward to continuing to look at your journey as you again continue to do great things. So thank you so much for joining us. Looking forward to bring you more incredible guests on the RN Mentor podcast, and we'll see you soon. You've been listening to the RN Mentor with your host, Ali Tayeb. Please don't forget to visit www.alirtayeb.com. That's www.alirtayeb.com for podcast notes and resources. And don't forget to subscribe. Until next time, I wish you fair winds and following seas.